Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
The Burdens of Leadership, Chapter 19 of 2 Samuel. This was one of those messages that started out that way and took an abrupt left turn. It's like, okay, Lord. So today what we're going to do is look at the whole chapter of 19. We will then cover some key points in another message. But tonight we'll cover the whole thing. A review, the battle between the forces of Absalom and the forces of David is over. The death of Absalom brought an end to the whole thing. His head was stuck in a tree branch. Joab and his men slew him there. Joab sounded the alarm and the battle was over. Many lives spared. The people fled to their tents. Then word needed to get to David that his son was dead. He originally gave orders to deal gently with Absalom, but Joab blatantly disobeyed and saw, too, the very death of Absalom. David grieved greatly for the death of his son. Well, while David's forces were victorious, the sad truth is that many died needlessly. Families were hurt. The testimony for God before the nation was hurt. And the sad truth is, we see at the end of chapter 18 and the beginning of chapter 19, the incredible grief that David has for his son, and in comparison, almost neglecting the 20,000 that died. Well, the battle is over, and so it is. Now it is necessary to move back from Mahanaim, cross the Jordan, back into Jerusalem. This chapter is very similar to chapters 15 and 16. In chapters 15 and 16, David was leaving Jerusalem to Mahanaim. In this chapter, he is going from Mahanaim back to Jerusalem. But what makes them so alike is the events of the people that David meets. He met numerous people when he was coming from Jerusalem to Mahanaim. A variety of people came. Some stayed, some went. Some brought gifts, others had other responsibilities. Now that David is leaving Mahanaim, we're going to see a very similar pattern where he is dealing with people all along the way. I was originally going to do verses 1 through 8, and I saw a pattern that caught my attention and redirected this message. Each of these situations or interactions where David met a person or dealt with a person, it had a same outline. It's four steps. You have the situation, you have the behavior of that person or mindset, you have either a rebuke or a commendation, and the resulting response. Four steps. This is what caught my attention and moved this to change as it did. We're going to look at these multiple situations of a situation, behavior, rebuke or commendation, and the resulting response in chapter 19. This, I think, also is what tells us so much about the practicality of Scripture. Because what David is going to be dealing with is good and bad. In some cases, he's going to have a rebuke, and in some cases, he's going to commend someone for a job well done. Either way, God is still on the throne, and we must seek to please Him in all of our circumstances. Verses 1 through 8, David was wrong. Verses 9 to 15, the people were wrong. verses 16 to 23, Shimei did right. Verses 24 to 30, Mephibosheth did wrong. Verses 31 to 38, Barzillai did right. And verses 40 to 43, both Israel and Judah did wrong. And that wrong will extend into chapter 20. Let's consider. 2 Samuel chapter 19, verse 1, the situation. And it was told Joab, "Behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom." Simply put, Joab has killed him. Word has gotten to the king. And now word gets back to Joab. The king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. All right, that's the situation. Let's consider the behavior that results from this. I am going to be reading more than you have. Obviously, I couldn't give you all of the verses, but I have given you key verses. Then listen as I fill in. 2 Samuel 19:2, "And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. They have risked their lives in battle. They have remained faithful. They conquered the job. God blessed. It's over." And the king isn't happy. "And the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, 'Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son.'" Okay, we have the situation. We have the behavior. We have a response. Joab, David's nephew, one of the three generals over his army, the one who slew Absalom. Verse 5. "And Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well." He was pretty forthright. Was there truth in what he said? Yes. Was he wrong about the way he presented it? Absolutely. Verse 7. "Now therefore arise, go forth, and speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night." That must include him too. He is saying, "I am going to leave you if you don't get over this." And apparently he plans on taking people with him. "And that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now." Now, I don't know whether that's true or not. You have to wonder who would be loyal. Quote, "But for the rough faithfulness of Joab, the consequences would have been disastrous. The victory that day was turned into mourning, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. Everyone was discouraged. The man for whom they had risked their lives had not a word of thanks to any of them, and could think of no one but that vile son of his, who was now dead. In the evening, Joab came to him and in his blunt way swore to him that he was not more affable to the people. They would not remain a night longer in his service. Roused by the reproaches and threatenings of his general, the king did now present himself among them. The people responded and came before him, and the effort he made to show himself agreeable kept them to their allegiance and led on to the steps for his restoration that soon took place." He cuts to the quick with his words to David, and he threatens him. And through it all, David said, "There's a degree of truth in what Joab's saying. I don't like the way he said it, but he got up and he did right." I want you to stop and think about this as we consider the burdens of responsibility on leadership. One of the things that certainly we see in David is the ever-present reality of shortcomings, own personal weaknesses, mistakes, failures. We're human. And David there is weeping, and he's confronted, get over it. And he listened. And I want you to see this. He changed. Look what he did in verse 8. Then the king arose and sat in the gate. The gate is known in those days, the place where transactions were made, government decisions were known to be there, at the gate. It was right for him to be there. Then the king arose and sat in the gate. And they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit at the gate. And the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. David did right, and the people returned. Was it painful? Yeah, it was painful. But it shook him to reality. Let's consider the next situation. This scenario. The people are wrong. The situation is there at verse 8. David is sitting at the gate and the people are coming. This is the situation, but look at the behavior. Verse 9. And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? Isn't anybody trying to help the king? Give him some encouragement? Again, a quote, it was now open to him to follow either two courses. David could either march to Jerusalem at the head of his victorious army, take military possession of the capital, and deal with the remains of the insurrection in a stern fashion common among kings, or he could wait till he should be invited back to the throne from which he had been driven and then magnanimously proclaim an amnesty to all the rebels. We're not surprised that he preferred the latter. It is more agreeable to any man to be offered what is justly due to him by those who have deprived him of it than to have to claim it his right. It was far more like him to return in peace than in that vengeful spirit that must have hundreds of rebels slain to satisfy it. He chose the high road. So it is, the people are not doing anything to get David up to the throne. We picked Absalom, he's gone, what are we going to do? Verse 11. The king David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, saying, speak unto the elders of Judah. Come on, guys, get in gear. Saying, why are ye the last to bring the king back to the house? Seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house. The word is out. You guys are leaders. Why don't you stir up the people? And let's kind of encourage and think about David, what he all has been through. So we have a situation. We have the resulting behavior, the rebuke, and the response. Verse 14. And he bowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word to the king, return thou and all thy servants. So the king returned and came to Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. They did right. They were rebuked, they learned from it, and they applied themselves not only to just spread the word, but to go over to the Jordan and help him in his return home. The third one, in verses 16 to 23, Shimei did right. We have to remember who Shimei is. He's the guy a few chapters earlier that was throwing stones at David and cursing, and Abishai said, let me kill him. This guy was pretty brutal to David. Verse 16, and Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, which was a Bahurim, hasted and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. He's applying himself. It almost sounds like he wants to be first. Verse 17, you don't have it. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. They went over Jordan before the king. And there went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan. This man who once was cursing David and throwing stones at him is now bowing. Quote, this next incident at Gilgal was the cringing entreaty of Shimei, a Benjamite, to be pardoned the insult which he had offered the king when he left Jerusalem. The conduct of Shimei had been such an outrage on all decency that we wonder how he could have dared to present himself at all before David, even though, as a sort of a screen, he was accompanied by 1,000 Benjamites. He prostrated himself on the ground before David, and his confession of his sin and abject deprecation of the king's anger are not fitted to raise him in our estimation. They were the fruits of a base nature that can insult the fallen, lick the dust off the feet of men in power. It was not till David had made it known that his policy was to be one of clemency that Shimei took this course, and even then, he must have 1,000 Benjamites at his back before he could trust himself to David's mercy. He knew he blew it big time. And he went and humbled himself. So it is. We have the situation where this Shimei comes to greet David. His behavior, verse 19, and said unto the king, Shimei speaking to the king, let not my lord impute iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely that day, that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I am come the first this day of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. What more do you want from somebody? They lay on the ground and say, I'm sorry, it's all my fault. And David says, great. Take a look, verse 23, David's response. Therefore, the king said to Shimei, thou shalt not die. And the king sware unto him. You see, Abishai there was ever ready again. Hey, let's kill him. And David said, no. No. We have the situation. We have the behavior. We have David stopping Abishai from killing him. And he looks at Shimei and gives the response, you're not going to die. Fourth, Mephibosheth. There is controversy on this guy Mephibosheth, and we're going to cover this more in detail next week. This guy's got problems. We'll see that more next week. Take it at face value right now. The situation, verse 24, Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day came again in peace. Mephibosheth is the grandson of Saul. He is the son of Jonathan. And David had said, is there anybody left of the house of Saul I can show kindness? They brought Mephibosheth to him, and he assigns Ziba, you heard that name just a little bit ago, to be his servant and take care of him. Strife comes between Ziba and Mephibosheth. We'll see more next time. Verse 25. Consider this situation now. He comes to greet David, and look at his behavior. It came to pass, when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king said unto him, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? Why didn't you go with me to Mahanaim? I told you to eat at my table. I gave Ziba to care for you. He was crippled of his feet from a little boy. Verse 26, again, you don't have it. And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant Ziba, implying, deceived me. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass that I may ride on and go to the king because thy servant is lame. But he deceived me because he's not there. We saw he was with another party. He had not shaven nor cleaned up. I want to ask this question. How did you make it down to the River Jordan without any help, but you can't apply yourself to be with David? Kind of funny sometimes what people can do when they have to do. So here he is crying the blues. And David says, verse 29, and David, the king, said unto him, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I don't want to hear any more of Ziba and you. I dealt with this situation before. Therefore, he's getting rebuked. It says at the end of verse 29, thou and Ziba divide the land. I'm done with you two. I've told you what to do. And verse 30, Mephibosheth said to the king, yea, let him take all. He's been pretty humbled now in front of the king. But he never comes out and says, you're right. I'm wrong. Verses 31 to 38, Barzillai does right. The situation, Barzillai is there as David comes to the Jordan. This is the man that several chapters ago, in chapter 17, he brought provisions to David as he arrived at Mahanaim. Verse 33, the behavior here, the king says unto Barzillai, this wonderful man, come thou over with me and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem. Come on, come with me. And this aged man says, verse 37, let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again that I might die in my own city and be buried by the grave of my father and of my mother. But behold thy servant, Chimham, let him go over with my lord the king and do to him what shall seem good unto thee. He is a man who gave greatly to David. Now David has the opportunity to reciprocate, and he offers, and the man is up in years, and he declines. And David says in verse 38, the king answered, Chimham shall go over with me. He responds and blesses Barzillai by accepting his offer. And further in verse 39, look at David's response. And all the people went over Jordan. When the king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own place. He wasn't angry. If that's what you want, that's fine. He did right, and David blessed him. We have our last scenario in verses 40 to 43, and actually it continues into chapter 20. Israel and Judah are wrong. The situation, they have crossed Jordan. They're finally back near Jerusalem. Is the situation, and consider the behavior here. Verse 41. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan? And the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is near kin to us. Wherefore then be angry for this matter? And the men of Israel answered, and they start arguing. And David is standing there saying, the civil war's over. And now you're arguing who gets the king. You all get the king. And it carries into chapter 20. But I now want to take that we've covered these scenarios of people interacting with David as he is on his return journey to Jerusalem. And consider the weight, the responsibility, the burden of leadership that is sitting on him. The country is engaged in civil war, such that he has been driven out of Jerusalem. He flees. 20,000 people and his son have died. The battle is over. He's exhausted. He's got a lot of work to do for the reconstruction, to restore the country, to heal the wounds. And here are these people arguing, who gets the king? He's saying, don't you understand there's a bigger picture? So we have this situation. I want you to think, and we'll quickly go through these again. One of the weights on David is the ever-present knowledge that he is the one that has sinned with Uriah and Bathsheba and caused this whole ugly mess. And if that were not enough, he's a sinner in himself. Even if he hadn't committed the adultery and the murder, he's still a sinner. We're all sinners. It's an ever-present weight on a good leader that he realizes or she realizes her humanity and her weaknesses or his weaknesses. He is wrong. He is carrying the weight of a civil war, and at the same time, he is carrying the weight of his own sin. He grieved to the point he discouraged the people. And yet, Joab, as coarse, as abrasive, as wrong as his technique was, he spoke truth. And David said, "You're right." He listened to correction and he responded. We saw that the people were wrong. They were not applying themselves to help him restore himself to the throne. This is the weight of a leader. Is anybody out there to help me get back to the kingdom? And he's looking at the elders of Judah in particularly saying, "Yoo-hoo! Does anybody else see the program here?" And then there's a breath of fresh air as Shimei comes to him and does right. The man prostrates himself before the king. There he is laying on his face. And he confesses, "It's me, I've sinned, it was awful." David, as a good leader, had to put it all aside. "Get up. I have no grudge. I'm going to take the high road. You're forgiven. You're forgiven." There were people that did not like that decision. "David, you just made an unpopular decision. He should die." And David said, "No, I'm going to restore him." Shimei did right. And David stood against popular opinion and forgave the man. Mephibosheth did wrong. Here he is, coming back, carrying the weight of civil war, 20,000 men. His son, Joab, rebuked me. "I've made a fool of myself in front of the people. I'm making that right." And Mephibosheth comes up, "You know, Ziba didn't treat me right." And David is saying, "You don't get it, do you? You don't see the weight I'm carrying." And David made some quick decisions. "I don't want to hear any more of this. There are much weightier matters than your childish feud that you have over there with Ziba. Get over it." Why, as a matter of fact, I got over it when Joab confronted me. He's refreshed by Barzillai, who did right, the man who gave him great gifts, provisions. In chapter 17, comes and respectfully declines the king's offer. And David, in the midst of all this, just getting done with Mephibosheth, again, the weight of all of it going on, trying to restore the throne, and he takes the time and says, "You know what? I'm going to put aside all of my burdens and care and extend kindness to that man. He deserves it." And he applied himself to think of others in the midst of all of the problems. As they came back, Judah and Israel start to argue over the king. And David is there thinking to himself, "Can't we just have unity? Can't we think of the goodness, how it's over, we can now restore, and you guys are arguing? Let's put this behind us and move on." David dealt with these issues while carrying the burden of the nation as he returned to Jerusalem. He certainly had much on his mind, but he had to apply himself in his humanity to each situation. We don't see David irritable. "Don't bother me right now." Rather, we see him controlled. We see him a thinker, applying himself the best he can. He had much on his mind. The nation surely does need to heal from this civil war. And David is doing his best. He is carrying with him the adultery of Bathsheba, the murder of Uriah, the rape of his daughter, the death of his son, and the death of another son. And he carried those with him and chose to do the best he could to do right, to tend to the people and their needs and the good of the nation.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.